So first of all, I think I really should apologize for having changed the subject matter a little bit. So my original plan and my original idea had been to, look at entropy, which comes up in many different contexts, right? And thermodynamics and quantum field theory and black hole thermodynamics and look at these different kinds of entropies. And somehow I try to compare them and see what they have in common and how all these different notions of entropy are related and also related to entropy in as information theory and dynamical systems theory. And so then, but ultimately, while I was preparing the talk and actually until this morning, I realized and eventually that this is probably a little bit too ambitious, in particular for moderating a discussion about it. So, and then I just want to focus on something a little bit more specific. And so, sorry about this. If this is not exactly what you expected, then please feel free to take off, and I'm fully understand if you're if you're looking for something else. So, what I want to talk about is, to some extent, give an answer to the question as to why entropy, by which I mean, why do we use a particular formula for entropy? Why do we quantify the amount of information or the amount of randomness that there is in a state or in a probability distribution in terms of a particular expression like trace of rho log O, rho, or I'm actually going to talk about the classical case only of probability distributions just because it's conceptually simpler to understand. Why do we use a formula like this? Sum over I, then pi log pi. It looks a little bit arbitrary. And I just want to explain some properties which this kind of prescription, this kind of formula has, together with some operational interpretations of it. And then I'd like to show how one can use these properties in order to characterize entropy in the sense that these properties single out that particular equation. And so that's sort of the plan. So let's start by just setting up the stage a little bit. So I need to talk about probabilities, and I need to talk about stochastic maps because Shannon entropy, which is what I'm talking about here, is about probabilities. And so that means we can consider finite sets X and Y. Like imagine like configuration spaces of a physical system or something like that. And a certain kind of dynamics given by a stochastic map from X to Y. And a stochastic map means that you have for every element little x of x and for every element little y of y, a probability denoted by this, which is fyx. So this is basically the probability to end up in the state little y if you started out in state little x. And so this is very simple. And so this means that basically we have a matrix of numbers which are satisfy some simple properties, namely that all these entries are non-negative. And for any x, for any sort of initial state that we can start out in, the probabilities of getting some y need to sum up to one. So this is just what stochastic map means, and this is the kind of dynamical setting that I'm going to consider. And so these have the nice property that we can compose them, that when we have a stochastic map from x to y and one from y to z, we get a stochastic map from x to z basically by matrix multiplication. So by just summing over all the intermediate possibilities for what the state in Y could have been. Pardon? Oh, yes, right, thanks. Yeah, this should be an X. Oh, and I also should have mentioned that these slides actually are, no, there's something cut off here at the bottom. So these lists, actually, that this is joint work with John Bass and Tom Lenster. And given that I just kind of changed the subject a little bit this morning, these are mostly slides, the slides of John. All right. So we can compose them like this. And so now I'm introducing this, what's called a category, which I denote by fin stalk. So this fin stalk, you should think of it as simply the collection of all these finite sets together with all these stochastic maps in between. So this is like a gigantic sort of space in which the elements are your sets, and then you have sort of a bunch of arrows going between them, which you can compose. And so finite sets are objects. And when we have these stochastic maps, there's what are called morphisms, this kind of like, yeah, processes between these. And every function, every deterministic function, or function in the usual sense of the term, we can consider as a stochastic map, right? Just by assigning for every input little x, the corresponding output f of x with probability 1, and all the rest is probability 0. So this is a stochastic map in particular. And now I'm not sure why I'm not seeing the... This is not displaying the whole slide. Sorry, let me try to fix this. Is this any better? Okay, I think this is better. Sorry. Okay, so in this way, the ordinary functions, which are like deterministic dynamics, are included, which is what this arrow stands for, in the stochastic maps. And now I just choose a set with one element, let me call this 1, and consider stochastic map of this form. Now, what is this? So this just, well, this is a stochastic map which can take only one input. So, and given this input, it outputs a probability distribution on X. So this sort of gadget is just a probability distribution on X. And so this is what I'm going to call, this is maybe a kind of a fancy way of saying what a finite probability space is. So just a finite set equipped with a probability distribution. And then we can consider measure-preserving maps between such probability distributions. So if you have a sort of physical system, which is in a certain state, in a certain mixed state, like thermal state or something, then it will be described by the sort of set X, or in general, it has more structure in the physical system, but just forget about that extra structure, and we just have this set X. And the sort of mixed state described by a probability distribution on it. And then we can consider dynamics in the sense of we can consider maps. We can try to let it evolve to, well, maybe the same system in a different state, or maybe even a different system in some state. And so then these are these measure-preserving maps. So then you let it evolve. So then there is some function here. So this is, I'm assuming that this is not stochastic, but this is a genuine function to some other finite set Y. And so then, well, you just compose this stochastic map, which is just a given state on X with the dynamics, and it gives you a map like this. And this is precisely the new state on Y, right, after the dynamics. So not very deep, this, I mean, just trivial things. And in terms of, if you want to write this in terms of an equation, you can say that that the the individual probabilities here for the outcomes or for these pure states, little y, they are then given by this equation. You just need to, in order to compute this probability, well, you just need to sum over the probabilities of all these pre-image, of all these domain values or states which map to y. So, or you can alternatively think of it as a deterministic way of processing random data. So this, we have random data here, and this is the deterministic processing. And then we got new random data. And so we can not only compose stochastic maps, but we can also compose these mustard-preserving maps. So there's some sort of dynamics F here, and then there's another, something else happening. And we got a third system Z. And this means that overall, again, we can assemble this sort of stuff into a category. That means we have, again, a sort of space which has objects given by these finite probability spaces, and then arrows between these corresponding to these mustard-preserving maps. And so now let me get to entropy. So any finite probability space we know has this entropy. And this is sort of the thing that I'd like to try and understand what makes this quantity so special. So maybe let me say first a little bit about what this, how to think of this quantity, how to interpret it. And so you can think of it as saying how evenly spread the distribution is. So if you fix your finite set and you vary the distribution on it, then, well, it's maximal when the distribution is uniform, right? So when it's maximally evenly spread, and when it's deterministic, so when one thing has probability one, all the others have probability zero, then this is zero. Or you can think of it in terms of if you know what the distribution, what this distribution P is, like the letters in English text, you know more or less what the frequency of each letter is. And then you sample from the distribution, meaning that you look at an English text and you look at a particular letter, then this quantifies the amount of information that you will learn. Pardon? Yes, so it depends a little bit on how you measure it. So if you just look at frequency distribution over all letters and compute the entropy of that distribution, I think it was 2-point-something bits. Okay. But this is actually an overestimate in the sense that in order to, it's a sort of a misleading computation because the individual symbols of an English text are not independent. And you should account for the correlations that are present in that text. So for example, if I tell you the letter Q in a text, and then you will know that the following, the subsequent letter is definitely not going to be an X or something. And if you take that into account, you get a lower value, and this was estimated by Shannon to be between 0.6 and 1.3 bits. So it's ridiculously small, just one bit per letter, more or less. And so we can compress English text quite a lot. If you interpret entropy in terms of compressibility, you can compress English text significantly. Okay, this was just another illustration. I guess you all know this, that for a coin, you know, we have these outcomes, then H heads and tails, with probability 1/2 each, and then we just plug in these numbers, and we get an entropy of log 2, and which is basically one bit. If you take the logarithm with respect to base 2, then we say measure entropy in bits. If we take the natural log, which is, I guess, what as physicists we want to do, then we would call this ln2 nats for natural, I think, units of information. On the other hand, yeah, as I said, if it's deterministic, you have entropy zero. So what makes this quantity so special? And in order to understand this, I would like to look at not at the entropy of the individual distribution, but at how much it changes under this dynamics. So I hope that this will be kind of intuitive to a physicist, that you look at what happens if you let the system evolve in some way. So if you apply a measure-preserving map, in a sense, as I had defined it earlier, some deterministic processing. And then you look at a change in the entropy. And so then the data processing inequality, or at least in one form, says that this change in entropy is non-negative. Because basically, well, you can only do deterministic processing, so you cannot add more randomness. So if you think about entropy as a measure of randomness, that means that the amount of randomness cannot increase under deterministic processing, and so this is how to think of, yeah?
Did you demand f was a function or just
yes.
A
cap?
Okay.
Yes.
That's what you call it, deterministic processing.
So for unless there are kind of typos somewhere, the genuine functions are denoted by straight arrows, and functions which can potentially be, well, the general case of stochastic maps are these wiggly arrows here. So, deterministic, yeah, this, I've said this.
I think I missed it. What was measure preserving?
Yes, this I'm assuming here that when I...
What did it mean?
Oh, that basically when you take this distribution here and you process it using F, so you compose these two maps, you get to this Q. What you got is this Q. That's the definition, yeah.
Is it just maps that add noise, or in general would add noise?
So F does not add any noise, right? Because F is supposed to assume to be deterministic. The straight arrows are deterministic maps. Only the wiggly arrows are the ones which can potentially add noise, which are stochastic. And here, well, in this case, this just starts on a one element set, so this is just a fancy way of stating that let P be a distribution on X. Yes.
On a different.
On a different, general, on a different set.
But one F doesn't have to be injected.
No, F doesn't, a priori doesn't have to be anything. Just a deterministic function.
So it can add noise. If two possible x's go to one y, then you lose information in some.
Yes. So exactly. You lose information, and so this is why we call this information loss. The difference in entropy is what we call the information loss, but it does not. But by adding noise, I would mean, or I would understand that the map itself would be stochastic, would add additional randomness, and so this is not what happens. And so now, well, when we do this two times in a row, and we look at a total information loss, so the information loss of this composite map. So this is just the difference of the entropy here and the entropy here. So now we can insert the zero term in between. And so we see that this is the information loss incurred by F, and this is the information loss incurred upon applying G. So this information loss notion is this additive under composing maps. And in more in a category theoretical terms, we would say that this is what's called a functor. From this category fin prop to another one in which basically two numbers, non-negative real numbers. So this is, yeah, a category one object, node a star, and then addition is composition. And so the question is, can we characterize this map? Does it satisfy some properties? Information loss is an assignment of a number to each measure-preserving map. Does this have some particularly nice properties which single it out among other conceivable measures of information loss? And so the answer is yes. And these two properties which single it out are what I would like to call convex linearity and continuity. So continuity does indeed have the obvious, pretty much obvious meaning that you may think it has. And convex linearity, so let me explain what this means. And now this may look a little bit scary, but it's actually very simple again. So if these finite probability spaces, we can consider convex combinations in the sense that we can flip a coin, which lands heads with probability c, lands tails with probability 1 minus c. And in the first case, we take a system described by x and in state p. And in the second case, we choose to take a system described by state space y and distribution q. So this is a sort of, we randomly choose which system we are going to do our experiment with, or something like that, right? And so we can not only do this on the level of these finite probability spaces, but also on the level of these mesh preserving maps, or the stuff that we do within our experiment with the systems. We can also simply choose that at random, determined by the coin flip. And in the sense that, well, if we have a way of transforming system X into X prime, given by some processing F, and another way of transforming Y into Y prime, given by G, then we can simply, well, take our coin and do the X to X prime thing with given by F with probability C, and the Y to Y prime thing with probability 1 minus C. So this is all of which this means. And so now if you look at the information loss for this combined, for this random kind of processing, we find again a sort of linearity in here. And this is sort of, I think, the key point here, the key observation. That when you look at the information loss of a randomly chosen processing, so randomly chosen as acting either in system X or as acting on system Y, then this is precisely the corresponding expectation value of the information losses. So this is a very natural thing to require. And so the information loss in terms of entropy satisfies this, because entropy has a particularly nice way of computing the entropy of this randomly selected system given by this kind of formula. So you take basically first the expectation value of the individual system entropies, and then an additional term SC, which is basically in thermodynamics terms, the mixing entropy. Because you're kind of choosing between two systems at random, so you need to take a mixing entropy into account. But now when you plug this in, you'll notice that this is, well, we get this mixing term on the left, but we also get it on the right. So when you compute the information loss, there's a difference of these two terms, it cancels. So this is how one arrives at this convex linearity here. And this is really the fundamental property which almost characterizes entropy uniquely. And this, to my mind, this is quite fascinating, because now this, we've characterized this in terms of as a kind of linearity, whereas the original expression for entropy involving this kind of funny p log p thing is anything but linear. And I think, yeah, this is kind of what makes it nice. So now concerning the continuity, the point here is that these categories are really R spaces in some sense, so they have topological structure. And then this information loss map is actually continuous in the structure. And so then the theorem is that any continuous convex linear map having from between these two spaces is a constant scalar multiple of the information loss map. So whenever you, in the sense that there exists some constant, some non-negative constant alpha, such that the given map F, which satisfies the properties, looks like this on all processings G. And this is, I think, the main the main theorem here. And to my mind, this, as far as I know, this is kind of the most elegant characterization of entropy. Oh, and maybe I should add that while we're actually characterizing this information loss thing here and not entropy directly, right? But we're implicitly also characterizing entropy in the sense that if you just consider a processing to a trivial system, which is only one state, so if the y, if the f going from x to y such that the y has only one element, well, in that case, you have complete information loss. The information loss is given by the entropy itself. So the entropy of the codomain, which is this one element thing, is zero. So in that case, information loss restricts to the entropy. And so this is all contained in here. And so the easy part of the proof is showing that this any f satisfying these things is going to be of the form there's going to exist a quantity which assigns a number to each object, to each probability space, in such a way that the f is given by the differences of these numbers assigned to the domain system and the codomain system. And the hard part is to show that in this quantity is actually when the p log p comes out. And for doing this, we've relied on earlier characterization of entropy at U2 for the if. Okay, so there are two generalizations of this. So the first one is that this convex linearity of the information loss thing, we can kind of modify this a little bit and put a certain exponent here and here. And this corresponds to a different kind of behavior under choosing your process at random. And it turns out that that also corresponds to something nice and something which has been studied, in this case, in this kind of non-extensive statistical mechanics by Zales. And so this leads to characterizes in exactly the same way Zales's family of entropies, which look like this. And so this family also has the usual Shannon entropy as a special case. If you take the limit as beta goes to zero, it's closely related. Rani entropy looks a little bit different in a sense that you wouldn't take this one minus here, but you would basically take the log of this partition function here. So the two are, you can translate one into the other via just a simple. And
it's a function of the other.
Yes, yeah. Uh-huh. Rani entropy is nicer in some sense because it's it is extensive, so it is additive. While the Zales entropy here is not, but also then this one has the nice property in the sense that it's characterized by this sort of condition. So I guess they both have their uses. Yeah?
Did you say the modification was to get the Zales?
That, so the statement is exactly the same, just that you put the exponent beta here in front of this, to the c, and here as an exponent to the 1 minus c. So when beta is equal to 1, then there's no exponent, and so in that case we have Shannon entropy. This is a little bit like a cute deformation of a derivative or something like that, if you've seen this sort of thing. Yeah?
Can you extend that to other algebras than just real numbers, complex numbers, where you define positivity in some particular way?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, and I thought about that, but so far we don't have really much results here. But actually what I think should happen, so I don't have a proof of this, but I think that the non-negative real numbers come out from these kinds of assumptions in a way as well, in the sense that if you don't even fix this codomain here, then it should be possible to show that any other assignment like this with any other codomain here will factor through the Shannon entropy information loss, will be a function of it, and in general you will get a function from the real numbers to the other codomain. So basically, so yes, I guess you can consider other kinds of things there, but I suspect that this one does play a sort of distinguished role. And it's a little bit like when you take all this space or this collection of finite probability spaces with all these arrows going in between. What entropy does is a little bit like forgetting all these objects, but just keeping the arrows and kind of crushing all these objects down to one single thing. And then what you have is simply, algebraically speaking, it's just a monoid, basically a bunch of an algebraic structure in which you can add things. I'm not sure if this was understandable.
Why is the upper bound infinity if I can't bound that?
Because, well, and this contains all finite probability spaces. So there's no uniform upper bound on the entropy, right? Because it just depends on how big, how many possible outcomes you have. And so the second generalization is about relative entropy. And so in some sense, entropy is, in many contexts, actually has a flavor of a relative entropy. And so maybe let me just explain this. I'm sure that also many of you know this already. Let me try to explain this on the blackboard. That if you generalize the stuff that I've been saying so far to continuous distributions, then you would write down, you would basically think that, well, okay, I need to replace a sum by an integral, right? So then I have a continuous density here. P of x log p of x dx. And this gives what's called a differential entropy. And in some sense, this is a relative entropy, which means that there is a sort of reference measure implicitly contained in here. And so this is a bit of a vague statement, but what I mean, for example, what I mean by this is that the Shannon entropy in the finite case is completely invariant under permutations of the state space, right? Whereas this, if I apply an arbitrary sort of diffeomorphism or whatever to this x, in general, I will get a kind of derivative here, the integral will change and I will get a different number. For example, if I just rescale x by a constant scalar, in general this quantity will change. And so this is not as absolute in the same sense as entropy is absolute for the finite case.
But couldn't you say that in the finite case it's also relative to the uniform distribution?
Sure, yeah. It's just not so apparent in that case. I think that this was just to illustrate the point a little bit more clearly. So in some sense, and so you can make this more explicit and obtain actually a diffeomorphism invariant quantity if you say that I'm actually comparing this to some reference distribution Q. So now if you take this quotient, And now, whenever you apply a diffeomorphism, you also transform the Q accordingly, then this gives an invariant quantity. So in some sense, entropy is often a sort of relative entropy. You're always, maybe not always, but mostly comparing your distribution to something else. So in the case of these finite probability spaces, you are implicitly comparing it to the uniform distribution because the uniform distribution has the highest entropy for the given state space. And well, so this relative entropy also has other uses. in information theory, quantum information theory, and I guess also in you know, more recent developments in entanglement entropy and QFT. So, but let me get to the point here. So this is the general form that this is basically the definition of relative entropy. It's sometimes also called Kalberg-Leibler divergence, which so refers to the same thing. But I guess, yeah, it's just a case that you've heard this term, but it's kind of much less descriptive than saying relative entropy. And you can think of this kind of operationally as the expected amount of information that you gain or what that you learn when you thought that the right probability distribution describing the system was Q, but then you sort of discover, you kind of update your belief to saying that, well, it's actually P. So P is something like the real distribution and Q is something like the prior. And so this can also be infinite now, because, well, if this is zero, but this is non-zero, then you have infinity here. And there's a similar a characterization of this quantity, which has a bit of a similar flavor. And I would like to explain this because it has a nice interpretation in terms of Bayesian inference and in terms of updating your beliefs. So this is what we need to replace this notion of measure-preserving map, which previously we had used to characterize the usual entropy. We need to replace it by this sort of gadget in order to describe, in order to characterize relative entropy. And so what we have here, again, are two systems, X and Y, equipped with these mixed states or probability distributions. And the way to think about this is that X is sort of a system that is being observed. F is something like a measurement that is being conducted. And Y corresponds to the set of possible outcomes of that measurement. So this is just a way to think about this. This is not supposed to be precise in any sense. So now if you get a certain outcome, little y, then what you do, you need to infer something. Well, you've made the measurement in order to make some inference, in order to make some conclusion about the original system X, right? So there should be something going backwards. And that's precisely this S. So this is now a stochastic map assigning to every outcome little y a probability distribution over this X. So this is like, for the given outcome little y, what would you expect that the distribution, that the state of the system X is if your measurement resulted in that outcome? And in order for this to make sense, you should better have that that distribution is supported on only those elements and only those elements of the state space which actually recover your measurement outcome. So this results in that condition that when you make this inference on some element little y in here, and then you do that measurement, then you get that element little y back. So this is what this means. And again, I'm just assuming that the F is measure preserving as before. So this is a little bit more complicated and has this interpretation in terms of measurement and Bayesian inference. So this is, yeah, just the same thing described in words. And now any such gadget, we can assign to it a relative entropy, which is we can assign to it a number which says essentially how much information we gain when we learn the real distribution P given our guess on what the distribution was. So what we would guess what the actual distribution of states is is the one given by the distribution of the outcomes of our measurement, convoluted with what we would infer about the system for each measurement outcome. And so in this way, well, we can assign to each of these things a number given by this relative entropy. And there's one special case here, namely the one that our guess of what the original distribution over the elements of X is was correct. So this was our guess, and this is the real distribution, and our guess was optimal or correct if these two coincide. And in this case, well, this, we have the same distribution here and here, and then, well, because of log of 1, so then this fraction turns into a 1, and so then this relative entropy becomes 0. And so all of these kinds of these new arrows, all the optimal ones, these form a kind of subspace of the collection of all of these arrows, and they form a particular nice, they form a subspace in which this D relative entropy thing vanishes. And so now the theorem is this, that again, we basically have a characterization as before. We have the same properties as before, that this kind of functoriality, this convex linearity under doing things at random, it's not continuous anymore. It just has to do with the relative entropy taking on infinite values. It's only lower semi-continuous, kind of very technical detail. And it vanishes on all these in all these cases when we've made the correct guess. And these properties again characterize the relative entropy uniquely up to a constant scalar. And so in this case, the proof of this is way more difficult. And so while previously we had to rely, or we could rely on an earlier characterization, that somebody else had proven. In this case, that actually turned out not to be the case, and there was an early characterization before, but that turned out to be erroneous, and we basically had to do everything from scratch, and this was spans like about 15 pages. And it would be nice to have a simpler argument for this, but yeah, I really don't know. Yeah, I think that's it already, and I'd still be curious to hear people's opinions on what entropy is in general, and whether this has to do with anything. It may well be that the answer is no. Personally, I'm actually a little bit skeptical. So, I mean, so this is algebraically, let's say, from just mathematical elegance point of view, this is, seems quite nice. But in terms of, let's say, if you want to use this to explain how entropy comes up in physics, that seems like quite a different type of question, and I don't really know yet how to make the connection here. But I'd like to hear if anyone has any thoughts on that or on the nature or the sort of fundamental nature of entropy or something. I'd be curious to hear. Thanks.
So from information theory and thermodynamics, we know that the Shannon entropy or the von Neumann entropy have an operational meaning, the asymptotic limit of doing an experiment
yes.
many times, right?
Yeah.
Whereas in the single shot, for a single shot scenario, it's not the adequate measure. So I was wondering, what is the operational meaning of this convex linearity? And if you can relate this somehow to some asymptotics, to some
repetition. Yes, that's a question which also is very much on my mind, but probably don't have, to the second part, I don't have a good answer. But the operational interpretation of this convex linearity is just that if you can do either a process F or a process G, and you decide at random which ones of the two you want to implement, then you can regard this whole procedure, this whole protocol taken together as a new process, right? And then the information loss of this new composite process is just the expectation value of the individual ones. That's, I don't know if this is enough of an operational interpretation. If this is operational enough. So this is all that I can say about it. Yeah.
You discussed the English example. If you consider a cell with a virus, how would you compare that in terms of entropy? Is one maximizing entropy compared to the other?
And what do you mean by a cell with a virus?
But you're talking about the entropy of X and Y as two different domains. Can you apply that to a cell and a virus in fighting each other? How does the entropy of that system look?
I don't know. I mean, so a cell and a virus are already a very complex system and very much out of thermal equilibrium, right? Like life in general is very much out of thermal equilibrium.
But the entropy of a cell by itself would be different from the entropy of a cell fighting a virus, would it not?
And so can you define then more specifically what sort of entropy you're talking about in that context?
Well, maximizing the entropy of the cell would mean it would be dead, correct?
Exactly, yeah.
So the cell being alive,
yes,
would have less entropy than,
yes,
the cell dying. So whether from a game theoretic perspective, the virus and the cell, I mean, if you drew a graph of it, whether the virus wins, then the virus entropy would go down, the cell would go up. If the virus loses, it would be vice versa.
Yeah.
That kind of discussion.
That sounds a little bit related to kind of Schrödinger's ideas on entropy in life, no, and food. That's an interesting, yeah, so that's a good question, but there, as at the moment, I still don't see how to connect these things, unfortunately. Yeah, so this to my mind seems to live at a kind of much more abstract level, right? And then if we look at biological systems, well, it's really hard to even define in the first place to give a precise definition of what entropy then actually means. I guess you can take some kind of microcanonical ensemble or something like that. But I don't know. But do you have any? Yeah. So personally, for me personally, the main obstacle with that kind of thing is that, in order to make a precise connection there, I first need to have a precise definition of entropy in that context. And that's partly due to my own insufficient understanding of thermodynamics, seems difficult.
But if you do it for the English language, you could do the same thing for, I guess, chromosomes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I'm pretty sure that people have computed that, but that's, I don't know the numbers there off the top of my head.
And that, do you know what's the highest entropy language?
Probably Chinese.
And that's a bit vague. Is that higher or lower?
Cantonese, or?
If you do it for character, then.
Yeah.
How did the axioms that you used to the properties that you used to characterize entropy relate to Shannon's axioms? They seem pretty similar.
Yes. So you can translate basically the convex linearity is essentially I think there are different names for it, like the branching rule or a chain rule or whatever you want to call it. The basically, if you have this kind of tree of a distribution, and for each outcome you have kind of a sub-distribution there, you can compute the total entropy of the whole thing in terms of the first distribution plus the expectation value of the entropies of the sub-distributions. That is encoded in this convex linearity here. But Shannon did have additional axioms which are actually redundant. Like he had something like, when you look at a uniform distribution, the entropy of the uniform distribution is a function of the size of the of that uniform distribution. It's an increasing function of that size. But that's, so that turns out to be redundant. But otherwise, it's, yeah, it's sort of built on that.
So you said you were skeptical of the connection between these ideas and physics use of entropy. So is that, I mean, you have, is the skepticism about the Maxwell's demon resolution or something else?
No, I think it's more about justifying these particular assumptions. And well, already looking at this sort of deterministic information processing, Vanessa will be a little bit explain what that corresponds to. And so in an actual physical system, it seems to be more like typically going the opposite way, that here the entropy is non-increasing, right? Because we have deterministic information processing. So this was the data processing inequality, that this information loss along the dynamics is always non-negative. And that's exactly, concerning the sign, is exactly opposite from the second law. Yeah.
So kind of the micro state then is sort of the X, and the macro state is the Y. And so then presumably the information loss is kind of the thermodynamic entropy.
Yes.
So that's not a good connection, or?
That's an interesting point, actually. Yeah, I haven't thought about it, actually. Haven't thought much about it from that perspective. Maybe there's something there, but this is sort of, you can't go any further. I mean, there you look from the micro states to the macro states, but then here I need to look at composing this thing and doing kind of several of these processings, one after another, in order to get the properties that I require here. The other kind of connection that I was hoping to get to would be more like along the lines of what Lydia had in mind, more like these ideas of considering thermodynamics from a more like engineering perspective of these resource theories, as in what sort of states can you convert into what other ones. And so then using certain kind of tools that you have in your lab and a kind of choice of operations that you can perform. And so with that, so entropy and also the Rennie entropies come up there. But in that case, it does seem to be quite different. And I think this was what the earlier question was getting at, but it's more like just the additivity or extensivity, which is relevant. And I don't see it, at least at the moment, don't see the role played by this kind of convex linearity. But you're right, maybe it's more about microstates and macrostates, yeah.
There. Any more questions?
If you think about the Wallace, they say the derivation of maximum entropy, why you use that reasoning, are you familiar with what I'm talking about? there's this idea that this thought experiment of throwing balls into a bunch of bins to generate a probability distribution,
mm-hmm.
and then entropy characterizes sort of the number of ways that you can throw in
yes.
the balls that meet
yeah.
a certain requirement. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I was wondering about translating that characterization of entropy into this framework, and
mm-hmm.
it seems that maybe sort of a conjecture that if you looked at the volume of the stochastic maps that preserve a given distribution, that might also characterize its entropy, volume in the sense of you have this topological structure on that.
Yeah. So yes, there are a lot of definitions, or let's say constructions of entropy along those lines. So one difference there is that, at least in the ones that I've looked at, which are kind of five different ones, that you need to always take some sort of asymptotic limit to some sort of large number of copies, or in what you mentioned originally, I think you also need to take a kind of macroscopic limit, no? That the thing which you map from, you need to make it bigger and bigger in order to approximate the actual value of the entropy closer and closer, no? You use things like Stirling's approximation.
Yeah.
And so that is always a sort of asymptotic thing. But
maybe, yeah.
I'd actually be curious to see how those kinds of definitions of entropy, how you can prove convex linearity from them. That I haven't thought about that much. But. Another one that one could look at, I guess, would be if you take a string of symbols sampled from your distribution, and you look at a number of strings from the same alphabet, which have the same frequency of letters, which have the same letter frequencies of letters. Or in other words, it's the size of the orbit of the string under the permutation group. And that gives you the same kind of, again, one of these many different ways of recovering entropy.
So if there's no further questions, let's thank you again. Mm-hmm.